Mushroom Hour. Today on Mushroom Hour, we're graced by the presence of author, researcher, and mycological maven, Elise Rothman. Coming to us from her hideaway in the woods and wilds of France, Elise is here to share with us her newest creation, a set of mushroom identification card decks that have been lovingly crafted with beautiful artwork and thoughtful graphic design elements that will help mycologists and ordinary folk alike to identify the common edibles, deadly toxic, and psychoactive mushrooms in North America and Europe. And I'm excited to learn everything about this project, including a brand new form of identification methodology, a kind of identification by elimination. Elise, thank you so much for joining us on the Mushroom Hour.
Glad to be here.
Well, it is seriously a pleasure to have you with us. You had a chance to send over the decks, the identification decks that you've been working on. I think it's going to be an amazing tool. But before we dive into all of that, your creations, you know, I am very curious to hear how you got interested in mushrooms and fungi. And I know you're there in France. So as much as you want to tell that arc, kind of how you got to where you are today, how you discovered your mycophilia, and really what led you to where you are.
Yeah. So I was in around 15 years ago, I was in, somebody told me about this festival in England called the Hay Festival. And it's a small village called Hay-on-Wye, which are with a population of 1,300 and 31 bookstores. And this little village on the border of England and Wales, during this Hay Festival, it mushrooms to 40,000 people. So there are people everywhere. There are people in everybody's house, in yurts, and grass, everywhere. So somebody had invited me to this festival and said, you're really going to have a tough time, you know, getting a place to stay. And I said, that's okay. I'll go over 2 months before. I'll rent a room in a house. And that way I'll be there in time and I'll get to walk around these 31 bookstores. I thought that was so cool. And so I had 2 months to kill in this little town. So I was walking in the fields. They have fields and forests. And so I'm walking in these fields. And by the way, I don't know if anybody knows this, but, you know, I would be walking through. They have these, in England, you have these, you're allowed to pass through everybody's private property. And they have these sort of gates that are signals for where you can go in and where you can come out. And so you're just walking basically through private fields. And so I walk through a field and there's all these cows. And I love animals. But I'm thinking, this is really strange. I'm going to walk right through this field with these cows. Okay, you know, I can do that. Anyway, I walk through. I'm like three quarters through. And this mother cow starts mooing and chasing me. And I'm like, oh, my God. I couldn't find anything. No. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm being killed by a cow. And anyway, I find the exit. I barely get out without being attacked by this mother cow. And later in the local pub, they're like, yeah, you didn't know, you can't walk in a field of cows. I'm like, no. It's like scanning my brain for that kind of information. No, I didn't know that. But anyway, as I'm walking through these fields, not the cow fields, otherwise I might have found some psilocybin.
Clearly, you learned your lesson.
Yeah, I was not going through any more cow fields. So I come upon this fairy ring of all these white mushrooms. Now, I had never even thought about a mushroom before this. And I'm like, wow, this is just so cool. You know, this green field and these white mushrooms, there were massive amounts of them. Like, I don't know, like 50, 60 of them. I'm like, what are the mushrooms? Wow, mushrooms, these are really, really cool. And so I said, you know, I'm going to find out about these. And I took this mushroom back to my room and I did some research and I started and I found out that it was a calloseed gamboso, which is the St. George's mushroom, which of course made sense because it was like April 15th or something like that. And it took me, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 hours to identify this mushroom. It was the first time I ever identified a mushroom. I'm like, you know what? I could die, but I think I'm pretty right about it. And I ended up eating that mushroom. That was the first, and now that I think about it, what was I thinking? You know, got very, very lucky. That was my first experience with mushrooms. And then when I left Hay, I went from Hay, I think I was in California, and I joined the Santa Cruz Fungus Federation. This is probably like, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago. And I started to go on forays. and got really, really into it. They have a great club over there where, you know, after the forays, you take microscopes and they give you books, David Aurora's book, you know, you're going to do, and you spend hours and it's frustrating, but you really get a good idea of how difficult it is. And that was sort of my, and then I moved from there to Colorado, where I joined I was in Manitou Springs, what's it called there? Is it Colorado Springs? I don't know. I've actually mentioned them in one of my guides because that was really my second thing. And so I just started every place I went, I just started joining clubs and got really, really into it. My profession was basically taking information and organizing it for companies. So a company would say, Elise, find me this, we need to do that. And, you know, give me the information. And I realized I had a knack for really figuring out how to give people what they need to do what they need to do in terms of data. And I was carrying a Mac on my back, an SE30 in 1984. So I'm like, wait, wow. I was like Mac when, you know, the second Mac. And it had a little backpack. I was traveling in between New York and Paris with my little Mac on my back with a plug. It didn't even have a converter, which you're too young to remember this, but all the other equipment needed this sort of stupid box you have to carry with you. But Mac was so brilliant. They had an inside converter. So I just had a plug when I went to France. So I've been in this world of sort of data and elements and how to make it more accessible to people. After, you know, 10, 12 years of identifying mushrooms, I'm like, this is ridiculous. This just doesn't work. You know, I'm buying books and books. I've got like 35 books. And this is just, how do you, I mean, and then I realized that, okay, wait, not to be too much of a feminist, but all of the books are written by men and they're all the same, except for, okay, yeah. David Aurora, you are my idol because he is the only one that actually addresses each of them. And this book is from 1986 or 96 or 83. I don't know. It's freaking old book. Okay. But he addresses each of the elements separately. So you can go to the mushroom, the species, and find out, you know, what's the habitat? What's the spore print? What does the margin look like? What all these things that the other books are just maybe doing some of them, but in words, and it takes hours to get this information that you need to be able to do it. So anyway, the real reason why I created this new tool was besides the fact that, you know, after almost 15 years, it still would take me 5 hours to identify a mushroom. I didn't know, okay? I must be stupid or something. I'm like, but you know, it's the family. You know, and I'm like, what does decurrent mean again? I mean, the amount of times that I had to look up that word, you know, it just, why does somebody not put the picture next to the word so you can remember it? Anyway, but the real reason why I created this deck is because, so we bought about 100 acres of forest right here in this small town. And the first year we're walking in this beautiful forest that we bought, and we come upon this place where there were like, I don't know, like just a ton of, what do you call them? Seps, porcinis, right? Just like, there's like a whole, there were so many of them, we called it Sep Beach. Okay. It was unbelievable. I'm like, wow, look, we've got mushrooms. It's great. I'm so excited. And then the next year we go to Sep Beach and there's still some mushrooms, but less. And by the third year, there are none. And I'm like, this is weird. Wait a minute. Hold on. There's lots of other mushrooms, but there's no Sep. Wait, people have been here. They've been kicking things over. And what I realized is that the locals knew where those mushrooms were. And the first year they left us alone. The second year they kind of came in a little. And the third year they said, oh, you know, they're going to go and get all the mushrooms. And I was so mad, right? But at the same time, my son and I have a relationship with the forest where we don't own the forest. We're guardians of the forest. So it was out of the question that we, you know, put private property signs, okay? Although I did think about it, but even if I did that, I was thinking of putting fencing around the whole property. I'm like, 100 acres, I don't think you're going to be able to do that. They're going to jump over the fence anyway. You know, no, I'm going
to. You have to hire guards.
I'm going to put a tent on Sep Beach and I'm going to sleep there the whole season. You know, I'm going to wake up really early. I'm going to get there before everyone. And I'm going to put a big sign, you know, take some, but don't take them all. And I was just so mad. And for 2 years, every time I was walking in the forest, instead of appreciating the forest, I was thinking about this problem of, you know, how to just leave me something. And then it dawned on me, Elise, why are you being so ridiculous? You know there are other mushrooms that are edible. Why is everyone after the same mushrooms? Why don't you see what's left, right? And get those other mushrooms, right? And that's when I started. So forget the steps. I was no longer interested in the mushrooms I knew. Now I was interested in the mushrooms I didn't know. And were they edible? And by the way, I think I must have been a mushroom in another life. Because when I walk into a forest, it's like I feel them. I go, okay, they're mushrooms here. Yeah. You know, this is great. I feel great. So, I mean, I love all mushrooms. It's not just the edible ones. I love them all. And I had ignored all these other ones for so long. And so I would take one back with me, and I know I've said this before. I must be stupid because it just take me hours and hours. And I have a microscope and everything. And I do a spore print. I do everything. And I'm like still not sure. I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like this. But if it's not this, if it is one of these elements off, what could it be? Right. So I started to do these cards for myself, and I would cut out a picture. I'd make a photocopy from a book, cut out a picture, put it on the front of the card. In the back of the card, I would say, all right, what's the spore color? What are the gills attached? Are they decurrent? Are they free? And I started to do this. And then my friends started to see the cards, and they go, at least we want those. I'm like, okay, yeah. And before you know it, I was like, you know, going to the printer. And that's the raison d'être. That's the reason for these cards, is really to help me and hence others do a much better job at identifying mushrooms, much, much faster. And to know that if it's something like the mushroom you know, what else could it be? No?
Well, and the mushroom identification decks do stand out to me as an amazing tool as well. And I think, you know, we're lucky that we got someone at the confluence of mycophilia and data analysis to figure out how to lay out these things to use, you know, what is really, like you said, infinite amounts of information between disparate sources, and how do you centralize this and do it in a way that you can actually use it in the field, you know, because that's the other thing that stands out is we've all had our guidebooks. I love Mushrooms of the Redwood Coast for where I live, but it's a massive book. Carrying that into the woods is not practical. So you end up making your collections and bringing it home. And of course, in that interim time, features change, things change about the mushroom, you know, so having something that you can use like this in the field, just when you sent me the idea, seems so eminently useful. Yeah. And I guess, how did you decide then where to start? Because we were hearing about you in the field getting frustrated by missing steps and really going after other edibles. But, you know, there's tons of edible mushrooms. We've had people on the podcast. I'm sure you've eaten dozens of different edibles. So I guess if you can, this, and I'm talking about deck number one of the mushroom identification decks, the edibles. I mean, why start there? How did you pick the mushrooms?
Cards, right? Why 49?
Yeah, why 49 cards? All, yeah. How did that idea formalize?
Even the editor is like, Elise, can you just make it 50? I mean, you know, why is it 49?
Right.
So, you know, there are many books that that have sort of the common edibles that people that, I mean, there are common edibles. There are mushrooms that are much more common than the others. These 49 that you have in front of you are, in fact, the most common edible mushrooms. And it's hard to believe, but it's in Europe and North America, excluding Mexico, because Mexico's a completely different thing going on there. So these are all fairly common. I say fairly common because in, you know, in England, they're like, this one's not that common. But these are all mushrooms that you will likely find. Okay, these are the mushrooms that you're most likely to find. Now, I excluded a few mushrooms that were just as common and just as yummy, but being able to tell the difference between that one and a deadly twin was too dangerous for me. Yeah. I didn't want to put it in. I didn't want to give people the impression that they, because I want to make sure that people, that, and I've said many times in all through the book, all through the guide, even the cards are not, the individual cards are not marked edible. It's because you have to have the whole deck in front of you, where the guide says, for example, if you do not have the entire bottom of the mushroom, if you do not have the base, you cannot use these cards to identify the mushroom. Okay, so you know, you have to have the whole set, you know, in order for it to actually work. But these are really the most common edibles that are fairly easy to identify. Now, on the cards, there is a number, 1, 2, or 3, of the, you know, how easy is it for you to, you know, to identify it or exclude the, above all, the deadly mushroom? Because the, you know, I wouldn't mind getting sick, even very sick. I just don't want to die eating them. So, you know, there are some mushrooms like the Caesar's Amanita, which is really easy to identify. I mean, from as long as you have a somewhat of an orange cap and a yellow stem and a yellow ring and a white vulva, the chances of you mixing that up are, you know, really, really slim. So I originally had 55, and then I just cut out the ones where I was just too concerned that, you know, you could mess it up. So I ended up with 49, and I kind of like the number. It was kind of like, you know, why not? Why not 49? Why 50? And so there you go. But out of these mushrooms, I found at least 40 of them in the area that I'm in France. If you want to talk about that.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I am very curious about that foraging landscape there in France. But just the fact that you gave yourself the task of picking mushrooms that would be common basically throughout that kind of Western European and North American landscape, that would seem really difficult to kind of bring that together cohesively. So I am also curious about that research process and how you put together this information. You know, maybe you sat with all those big tomes we were talking about and had to pull it and distill it. And maybe that's your art.
It goes on a giant spreadsheet. It goes on a gigantic spreadsheet. So all the data that I collected from everywhere. So I've got 34 books in 2 languages and the entire internet. And it just went. So, you know, as soon as the mushroom came up, okay, where is this mushroom? So go into the thing and then you sort, and then you know, how common, and then you basically just manipulate the data until you get down to something that looks like this.
This is the gift of a data analyst. And I know you had some kind of partners in mushrooms, partners in crime, in putting this together. Totally. Talk about that a little bit too, kind of who you bounced this off of, because you talked about the guidebooks, mostly written by men. There tends to be kind of a condescending element of this when people are fluent in mycology, and they tend to be very suspicious or very skeptical of folks who try to give some kind of identification tool. Or, I mean, we see it all the time in online message boards, things like that, where there can be some mycological superiority going on. So how did you approach this development process? Who did you work with to make sure the information you were giving rock solid, kind of unassailable?
Yeah. So each deck has a scientific advisor who reviews all the information, somebody who knows 1,000 times more than me, basically, and everyone else, you know, just somebody who's really, really good. The first deck, the edibles, the scientific advisor is a gentleman named Philippe Durin, who is the president of the Société Ternaise de Sciences Naturelles, which is the president of the natural science organization of this entire region. So this is a man who's been collecting mushrooms and other things, plants as well, for 40 years. So, he has a whole group underneath him. And it was great working with him. He's a super, super, you know, mild-mannered, you know, French professor type. Super, super nice. And when I told him about this idea, he said, yeah, you know, that sounds good. And so I went to his house every week with all this information and said, you know, how does this look? And is this right? And we worked for about 3 months together on this, him reviewing data. But what was really funny was, and then COVID hit, and we were like, look, I'm not going to go out there, because he was an older man, and, you know, I'm driving all over the place, and you're not supposed to be, you know, 20 kilometers from your house, and here I am driving for the mushroom thing. Like, I mean, and so I said, Philippe, I said, will you just look at these lookalikes and, you know, give me, you know, return this sort of analysis of what the difference between the edible and the lookalikes are. Okay, can you just do that for me? Because it's going to take you 5 minutes. It's going to take me 2 hours. He goes, sure, I'll do it. I get the information back. And he basically, not basically, what he did was the five lookalikes, he just described them. And I called Philippe up. I said, Philippe, I don't want a description of the mushroom. I want you to compare the mushroom to the edible and tell us what the differences are. And he said, but at least that's what I did. And I said, no, Philippe, you didn't do it. And then I realized, and this is a brilliant man. And I realized that, you know how when you see a word in a book that's missing a letter, you don't need that one letter. You just fill it in, right? You've got it in your head already. Yeah. These established mycologists, they have so much information in their head that they think that you know what you can't possibly know. They fill in the letter. That's not fair.
And I was
almost arguing with him, and he was so nice, but I did it at least. And I'm looking at him like, no, now I understand. Because he says, you know, the gills are chocolate brown. But yeah, but because he knows that other mushroom has white gills. So he doesn't have to say, you know, the gills are chocolate brown, not white. Or, you know,
yeah.
And because it's in his head already. And so I stopped asking him to do it, but he did validate all the information on the deck, you know, to make sure that, because there is contradictory information in the books and on the internet. You know, you have one, for example, the Phytophthalis prunellus, whatever, the Meunier, now I'm between my Latin, my French, and English. Anyway, most people say that the spore print is rose-colored, which it is. The twin is, they say that the spore color is white, but you have some books that say in mass it's pink. So you can't really use that specific element to differentiate the two. And so that's the sort of thing where I'm like, Philippe, okay, so what do you think it is? You know, what's your best bet? So that was Philippe Durand was the scientific advisor for deck one. On deck two, I had an amazing, I have an amazing man named, you may know him, named Michel Beekman, who's a Dutch mycologist, amateur mycologist, who's on, I think he's on 166 mushroom identification platforms in like four languages.
Jeez.
This guy is like, I mean, Philippe is nothing compared to Michel Beekman. He's unbelievable. So he was the scientific advisor or validated deck two, which was a little bit easier not easier than deck one. Deck one was pretty easy. Deck two was still easy. Because these are the deck two, the deadlies, these are mushrooms that have a documented death of at least one person somewhere in the world. Okay, that's what a deadly mushroom is. You're gonna see lots of websites that say this one's deadly, this one's deadly, this one's deadly. Well, it might be deadly, but for sure these are deadly, these have documented deaths. And because they have documented deaths, the information on them is fairly accessible. At least in peer-reviewed papers, they've studied the toxins associated. So that's deck two.
Well, and you brought up the flip side of the coin because deck one and deck two are inexorably linked. And it seems like your focus was on, hey, let's get the edibles, those that we for sure know are edible, the common edibles, those we for sure know are deadly, the common deadlies you'll run into. And that seems like the focus is very practical, very utilitarian. And what also struck me, and you can tell me if this is correct, but the intended audience then is your foragers, but it almost seems like maybe not the forager who spends, you know, all their time in the woods and has this mileage and again, fluency and familiarity with mushrooms, you know, where they're memorizing hundreds of different scientific names. But this really seems practical for those of us like me who are foraging more and like kind of weekend warrior going out. Yeah, I might not remember exactly what decurrent is, or I might not remember that scientific name. And so this is really a reference work for everyone, but that sweet spot to me seems to be like, you know, novice to intermediate forager.
Yeah.
This seems like, you know, an invaluable tool because a lot of times that's what you're most interested in anyway, is edibility or toxicity.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right there. I would go a little bit UK Wild Foods. What's his name again? Trenton.
John Renston.
John Renston. Yeah. John Renston. Is that right? But anyway, he said the same thing. He said, at least this is not for, you know, seasoned foragers. And I said, hang on a second, because the information that's on the back of the deadly cards, this was hundreds of hours of research to find out, you know, is the onset what is the onset? You know, how many is it? Are you going to get sick in 2 hours? Are you going to get sick in 6 hours? This is this deck, I think, has information for even the super seasoned, I would say, almost expert, and yeah, can definitely use this information. This was very hard to get, very, very hard to get. This was crazy.
I appreciate you then not putting us in that box, because, yeah, I mean, this information for me is very technical and advanced. There are certain elements you're including on here that I don't think of when it comes to mushroom identification. And so talk about that a little bit, the organizing principles of kind of what you decided to include and why, because the amount of information that you've managed to include on just this index size card is kind of mind-boggling. And I really love the way you did it with a combination of images, yeah, of descriptions, and even the process. You know, there's a booklet, a companion booklet that shows you where to start and kind of work your way around the card. Yeah. So there's kind of a hierarchy of identification features. So talk about that a little bit, about how you started and kind of worked through the different identifying features and even how you picked what to include.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to answer that question, to go back to the team also, because so you have this scientific advisor, and then you also have the artist. So deck one is an artist named Samuel Keen Arnold.
And the artwork's gorgeous, by the way. I'm talking about information on one side of the card, but the front of the card with the scientific name and the picture, I mean, the art is stunning.
So there are three artists so far. So the first artist is Sam Arnold. Now, Sam is the one I started this project with, and Sam is the one who helped me develop the back of the card. So he's a graphic artist as well. So we spent a year on putting the back together, because Sam was like, Elise, it should be the size of an iPhone. I'm like, Sam, I cannot get this information on that size. We had so many arguments because Sam didn't know mushrooms. Okay, Sam, he was discovering mushrooms. And I said, Sam, you have to have the general size of this mushroom. You can't take that away. You have to have this. You have to have that. So anyway, so Sam, and by the way, these artists, I just don't give them one mushroom. These artists have between 20 and 30 images, either photographs or drawings, to put together to create the most likely version of this mushroom, and to try to accentuate very, very slightly the elements that you need to be looking for.
Such a cool way to make a representation is not just one static photo, because we all know, I mean, mushrooms can trick you and look so different in different photographs.
The light of the photographer and the eye of the photographer, the angle, the background. How many pictures don't show the base? If you pull it out of the ground to show the base, then you don't get the mushroom in its habitat. You don't see how far it is. You don't see where it is, right? So you've got to figure out how to do it. So this was so they had a picture for the cap color, a picture for the ring, a picture for the cap texture, a picture for the form of the mushroom, one of the base, one of the, you know, they had close-ups of the margin. This is what you need to, you know, you need to make sure that the margin looks a little bit frayed here, you know. And we talk about the mushroom. It was great because these artists were so into learning about these mushrooms, getting really an intimate feeling. So, you know, this is what this ring looks like on this mushroom. You know, you want to, you know, this cap, the skin on the cap looks like a short skirt showing the gills. And that's why they call it the flirt. I go, oh, my God, that's great. You know, and so these are morphologically correct. These drawings, that is not an easy thing to do. So the first one, I love Sam's style. He's got this sort of Japanese style, but yet the mushroom is correct. It does look like what the mushroom could look like at its adult stage, because mushrooms are like people. And that's one of the reasons why the books don't work. You know, it's like you and I are both white. You're male, I'm female. You're probably tall, I'm short. You know, I'm pale, you're dark. I mean, to try to find a mushroom in a book is like, you know, you have 50% of the information. You have 50% chance of finding a mushroom in the book that looks like the mushroom you have, okay? So anyway, I tried to help these artists create a mushroom. He did a phenomenal job. The second deck, The Deadlies, is done by Rena O'Ryan, who's a Irish artist who has this I mean, look at that Amanita, that white Amanita. All the white Amanitas are just like, they're, anyway, phenomenal job. Hours and hours and hours I spent with these people on the phone. I'm pretty intense. So these poor people, it's like, you know, 2 hours, you know, for every day for a week, you know, to get these. And the third deck, which we haven't talked about, but we will. The third deck is Eleanor Phillips, who is also Irish, who lives outside of London. Now this deck, okay, well, we'll talk about this deck after because it's very, very special, the wild ones, particularly the being able to draw these wild ones. So first deck, scientific advisor, Philippe Durand, artist, Sam Arnold. Second deck, Michelle Beekman is the advisor and Rena O'Regan is this artist. And the third deck, Alan Rockefeller is the scientific advisor. Eleanor Phillips is the artist. And I want to talk about this deck before I move to onto this third deck. I just want to talk about the twins booklet.
The book that ties our edibility and toxicity together. And you talked about lookalikes.
Right.
And yes, you actually created a whole booklet that dives into that lookalike issue.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, so again, I'm a pretty big risk taker. There was, so every year, my kids and I, my adult kids and I try to take a vacation to do something that no one's ever done. And one year we were in Wales and we did this sport called coasteering, where you put on a wetsuit, rappel gear, and a helmet, and you climb along a cliff in Wales, like, you know, in Wales along the cliffs. And every once in a while you jump in the water and then the waves, they throw you up against the rocks and you're like in like in a washing machine. It's this crazy sport.
You guys are nuts.
No, I mean, there's a bunch of different levels, right? There's like the, you know, baby life. And so, and we were in a really low level. And that, but before we do this sport, you know, they give us a little talk on, you know, how to do it. And they said, it's really simple. Just don't do anything your parents wouldn't do. And my kids just break out in laughter. It's like this guffaw. They're like, are you kidding? You have no idea who my mother is. I must have a guardian angel watching over me because I can't believe I'm still alive. But I do not take a chance when it comes to mushrooms. Life and death is just not something I fool around with. And what was always bothering me with all of my books and all over the internet is that they'll mention one or two lookalikes. You know, sometimes they mention one lookalike. I'm like, wait, how could there only be one lookalike? You know, what? And if it's not that one, what other one is it? And I was amazed that no one, that this was only frustrating me. Okay. Because, you know, I want to know what else. So anyway, and this was something that I did for myself too, where I started to say, okay, if it's not this mushroom, if it's not this one, if it's not the Calceba gambosa, which is the St. George's mushroom, okay? It looks like St. George's mushroom, but you know it's not St. George's mushroom. For example, when you cut it, it yellows. It looks just like St. George's mushroom, but it yellows. What could it be, right? And so I started this list of what it could be and what the differences were. And this developed into this book that accompanies the edibles, where, and in the, you know, the first ones in first position are obviously the deadly ones. So what's the difference between the field mushroom and a white Amanita, to use the common names? Okay, what's the difference between the two?
Right.
Because one of them is going to literally kill you and the other one's going to be really yummy, you know, so what's the difference? So I created this book, and this Michelle Beekman, who's on all of these identification platforms. So he's the one who, you know, people will say, I think it's this one. And he'll be like, no, it's this one. So he knows all the questions that have ever been asked, you know, around him. And for any of the 34 books I have, if any of the books mentioned a twin, that was put into this book. And anywhere on the internet, if someone mentioned that there was a twin for this one, it was explored. And the differences between this twin and that one and what specifically to look for.
And you just, when you read the book, it's that concept you mentioned earlier about focusing on the delta, like explicating why this looks like it, but what is the critical difference that you need to look for? That I think a lot of times you hit it right on the head. People are filling in that letter and they're thinking, well, yeah, I just described it and that clearly is why it's different. But you do, it's a very explicit, right. Which again, someone like me really appreciates, is like you get a very explicit description of what the difference is.
And that was Michelle Beekman was really, really added to the book. He added an additional 150 mushrooms. There's about 500 mushrooms treated in that book. He's a caprinus specialist. So there's just three pages of caprinus mushrooms. And then we took that book, actually, that's inside the edibles deck, and we created a standalone book, which for the moment you can only buy on Amazon, but it's a great book. Now, that is good for even super seasoned foragers, because they know which one it's not. Now they have to figure out, yeah. We know it's not this one, so which one could it be? So I just wanted to mention the twins. The only other person that I've been able to find in Spanish, English, or French, because those are the only three languages that I can search on the internet in easily, because we can do anything these days, but easily. There was only one other person in 1945 that did a book on the twins, on the lookalikes. Otherwise, for some reason, no, it's not for some reason. You all have to be a data crazy person like me, because this was just, you know, years of work to pull this together. And it's not just, again, it's not just describing the mushroom or describing the differences. It's, you know, getting all this information. And if most people said that this was the difference, because there's contradictory information. So you have to scrub all the information. And so anyway, I use it all the time.
Well, and there's that challenge of figuring out what are the objective thresholds we're going to use to determine, you know, how alike something is. And, you know, it takes a data.
I can answer that. And this is the definition of a lookalike, because it's not easy. So a lookalike is a mushroom that physically, morphologically looks like another mushroom and has some or many characteristics or many or most characteristics in common with it. Okay. Many or most. So for example, the difference between a normal white Amanita, like an Amanita verna, and a field mushroom, for example, they're morphologically, they're correct. Although the rings are slightly different, you know, they have a little bit of a different ring, but the Amanita has a vulva and the field mushroom does not. And the Amanita's gills always stay white. And the field mushrooms does not. And so, you know, you just have to have those very, so, but they look like each other generally. That's what a lookalike is. Because sure, like I got really frustrated with myself the other day because I found a mushroom and I'm like, okay, I know that this is not a Macrolepiota procera. I know it's not a semi-shell mushroom. It's in that general Lepiota family. What could it be? So I look at my twins book. I'm like, God damn it, you don't have this one. Of course I don't have this one, because this one, which was the, I posted on Instagram, which was the Agaricus raciola, which grows in clusters. It's not a tall, elegant mushroom. Anyway, lookalikes, it's really not objective. It looks like it and has most or many of the same characteristics. That's what a lookalike is.
Yeah, so it's not going to be an exhaustive list of, you know, hey, this is in this family, now help me identify. That's an idea for a totally different database project, is to be able to figure out, hey, with these features, I know what this might be and be able to reference. That's a massive project on its own. But, you know, as we're talking about these cards, I have opened the page of your guide. So the deck that you gave me included the edibles deck, the deadlies deck, the twins guide that we just talked about. And there's also a handy guidebook with both the edibles and the deadlies deck that lays out how to use the cards. I mean, actually, there's some great information just about general, you know, vocabulary and terminology that you'll need to know. And then there's a little bit of instructions of how to use the deck and go through the cards.
The step-by-step process.
So if you can talk about kind of how you derived that process, and obviously it's pretty extensive, but there's 21 pieces of information put into this card artfully in a way where it doesn't feel too crowded and you can kind of delineate what the different sections are. But yeah, I guess what played into that decision process and how did you kind of make this step-by-step process?
Let's talk about something that's really, really easy to for people to understand. So one of the things that really frustrated me is if I found a mushroom on a trunk, a tree trunk, for example, and I wanted to identify it. There's no way to do that for a book. You've got to look through every, David Aurora is the only one who has a list of families of mushrooms that grow on wood. Otherwise, there's nowhere in any of the other books that you can easily find an edible mushroom that grows on wood.
Right.
So with these cards, you can very simply just take the deck and take out all of the mushrooms or eliminate all the ones that don't have the wood circle. And then you have 7 or 8 in your hand, and then you turn them over and you can see they look nothing like each other. Because from that one element, you have one in front of you that might be it, because of course morphologically the mushrooms change, and then you go to the twins book and you can eliminate the twins. So that's one way. But the main way that this deck it was made to work was really on a sort of an intuitive yet scientific way. So, you know, when people see a mushroom, one thing they pretty much know, and not always, but one thing they pretty much know is what color it is, okay? Or at least they know it could be white, okay? It's white or beige, okay? Or it's definitely not white or beige, you know? It might be brown or gray, or it might be, but so the cap color is sort of step one. So you know, the cards are ordered from 1 to 49 with cap colors that are white or beige in first position. That means that at an adult stage, the mushroom could be white or beige. That same mushroom could also be gray or could also be white. But if it could be white or beige at an adult stage, then it's in first position. So you can take all those, if you're walking in the forest and you find a white mushroom and you go through the first 19 are white or beige, you can eliminate more than half the deck just from that first thing. And then you turn the mushroom over, and most people can figure out if they're gills or pores or teeth, okay? And maybe the teeth and the pores aren't clear, but at least the gills are pretty clear, if it's gills or something else. And the color, you know, or is it white? Is it beige? Is it, you know, so you can eliminate, there's a beautiful drawing, and this was also the artist. This is the artist drawing a picture of the gills, not easy to find because you have to have a photo or drawing of the gills from one straight up and down. It can't be at an angle because you really have to be able to draw these nice and.
I thought these were stock images, so these are actual depictions. I'm just picking that up now. These are actual depictions of that mushroom's gills.
There are no
part.
Stock images of these gills. Sure, you have gills that are, you know, wide or close or, you know, but yeah, no, these are actual gills. And there was a whole
Amazing.
Group of pictures just for the gills. And so, you know, you can eliminate. So say you've got, I don't know, chocolate colored gills. You can eliminate all the things that aren't chocolate colored gills. Anybody can do that. First two steps, no problem. Third step is the habitat. Did you find it in grass, like in a park or something? Or did you find it in the forest? Or did you find it on wood? So these first three elements, because dichotomous keys are great if you know your elements. So the first one will say, you know, are your gills attached? And you look, you go, shoot, I don't know. If they're attached, go to 2. If they're free, go to 3. And you look at the gills, you go, really not sure. It's not that easy. Did they separate? Were these attached at one point? And so those dichotomous keys, so you go, okay, you know, I'll go to 3, but then I'll go back to 2 after. You know, if it doesn't work out, then you never go back to that.
You get lost.
You totally get lost. So this way, you know, first three elements, no problem. And then the fourth element, I think, might be the attachment of the gills. I'm not sure. But there again, you have the icon of detachment. So it took me 5 years to memorize the word decurrent. I know. I'm stupid. I get it. I kept going back to the vocabulary book. Why can't you, Elise, how difficult is it to, it's the same word in French and English, by the way, decurrent. So.
Oh, no excuse then.
There's no excuse. No, you know, except that I'm just like, and then you've got like adnext and adne, and then you've got, you know, notched, and then you've got, you know, yeah. And everyone, and right. Believe me, the French people that look at a mushroom and the English people, they don't always describe it the same way. So you're like, you know, anyway, so. I got a little bit of kickback on the fact that I don't have an icon for notched on that. You can see the icons. There's no icon for notched. And that was the Mushroom Mag in the UK. It was like, yeah, you know, we got your deck vetted and it's great. We love it. But, you know, you've got to put in Notch. I'm like, look, I'm not putting in Notch because it doesn't play into the identification or the difference between these edibles and their twins. In other words, that one element doesn't make a difference. And Notch still means it's attached. It's just attached with a Notch. To get all that information on the back of the cards with Sam, who is so mad that it wasn't the size of an iPhone. Sam, I know you're going to hear this, but you know, did the best I could.
I don't think you could have made it any smaller because the images, you know, you can still tell what they are. You can still read all the writing, thankfully. And I love that with that gill area, you have multiple, you know, there's kind of, it shows a cross section of a mushroom cap with its gills. So if it's attached, it shows two examples, which I believe one of them is notched, but it shows examples of what attached looks like, two different types on each side of this cross section.
Same with the current, same with free. Are you looking at the twins?
I am looking at the edibles number 49, started number 49, the cracked brittle gill, Russula virescens.
Did I add notch? Oh my God, I think I did add notch. No, I didn't.
Well, I don't think
you're right. You're right. That attached looks a little notched. You're right.
Yeah, like that would be when you're looking at it and keying in, especially in the field, that would be kind of enough to start this process of elimination. That's what I love so much as you're walking through this is, yes, unlike dichotomous keys, you have all the traits and their properties listed in front of you. I don't have to bang through my choose your own adventure to find every different trait that would be relevant. And so the process of elimination, when you send it to me, that's what really stuck out is because I've gone through the massive tomes. And yes, I have my finger in between like 10 pages trying to remember flipping back and forth. And it's, you know, a process, a time consuming process. Whereas this is a defining in the negative where you can take out things that it isn't until you end up with just a couple that it is. So
and
what I really like about this
is that if you, especially for, from novice to somebody who's been looking for mushrooms for 10 years, the fact that I put the elements there with the icon, for example, bruising, you know, people aren't even thinking of the bruising. So if you have the word bruising there, they go, first of all, they go, okay, what is bruising? If they don't know what bruising is at all, they go, what is bruising? But if they do know what the bruising or the change of color when it's damaged is, at least they know, okay, so yellow to green, you know, the red area or the blue area. I mean, no one in none of these books talks about those possibilities because that's all it is. It can either go yellow-green, it's in the red family, or it's in the blue family. Which one is it? Or it doesn't change at all. So cut your mushroom, bruise your mushroom, and you'll know which one that is. And because it's on the card, you'll look for it. Same thing with the vulva. If you don't know what the word vulva means and you see it on your card, then the question comes up, what is a vulva? So you look for it. If the word isn't there, you're not even looking. And when you're reading text in a book, you're not, right?
Well, and they don't all have the same kind of objective framework by which they're describing, even in the same book. They'll talk about traits with one mushroom that on the next mushroom description, they don't.
It drove me crazy. Like, why aren't they talking about the margin on this mushroom? I guess they don't think it's worth it. Or maybe they're not sure. What does this margin look like? You know, I want to know if there's nothing to know about the margin. I want to know that there's nothing to know about the margin. I don't want them just to ignore it. And I can tell when they don't say something, it's because they're sorry to be so feminist, but it's because men don't like to be wrong. So they'd rather not say anything than be wrong, right? So they just avoid the whole thing. Yeah, no, I'm very...
My wife's going to listen to this and nod in approval because I've been known to do that. But yes, and I mean, there is a written description, which is great. But for me, these visual references, these quick keys and objective framework, there are so many things about this that I think change that identification process for a lot of people or change kind of how we're going to start looking at mushroom identification. Now, obviously, there has to be kind of obviously it helps that there's kind of a scope in that, you know, the purpose is like toxicity or edibility. You're not trying to do this exhaustively. I mean, do you think you could have identification note cards for every mushroom out there?
And that's a a drawback of these cards. And because what could happen is you can eliminate and then you have no cards in your hand. Okay, you're nowhere. But at least you're nowhere fast and not nowhere after like 20 hours when you're nowhere. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, that's a problem. And that's frustrating. And I'm sorry. But
that's why it's an adjunctive tool to use out in the field. And yeah, if you run out of cards, okay, now you go back to the tomes and do the exhaustive list. But I love this as a quick tool. And I'm excited for mushroom season to really get into gear where I live in Sonoma County so I can bring these out in the field and start using these. But yes, let's make sure we touch on deck number three. So we mentioned the wild ones. Alan Rockefeller is the scientific advisor, which is amazing. But yeah, tell us about that deck, the inspiration and when we can get it.
This deck was the hardest deck to do. There's so little information out there. And I'm not sure if it's because they're illegal in most places, because people are just afraid. But I mean, everyone's using Paul Stamets' book, which is 1996, I think. I mean, it's my Bible. Okay, it's the only thing out there, really. By the way, I sent this to you in the email, but I just double blind. Do you know the magazine? Of course, you know the magazine Double Blind. About a year ago, I ran into them and I ran into their magazine. And I'm like, oh my God, I love these guys. I mean, the writing in that magazine makes me jealous. Okay? I would like to be able to write or speak the way they do. They are just absolutely amazing. They just came out with an article on how to identify wild mushrooms. Very, very rare. Nice article. I went through it. I studied it. It's good. It's solid, but it's a very broad overview. Great. Thank you for doing it. But I don't want to encourage, you know, or condone usage of magic mushrooms or entheogens or whatever, hallucinogen, whatever you want to call them, psychoactive mushrooms. But I do want to make sure that people know that there are deadly mushrooms that look like them. Because you want to go out and have a good experience. You do not want to die over it. Okay. Again.
Harm reduction.
I'm super glad about taking risks. I just don't want to die. And so really that's the purpose of this deck is to, you know, to get you as close as you can, but above all to make you aware that there are mushrooms that look like this one and what are the differences. So this information was tough. Thanks to Alan is in the process of verifying all the information. He probably knows more than anything I can find in any book, peer-reviewed paper, or on the internet. He's already seen all the work. He's approved it at first. Make sure that we're going to get all this done. Send him a deck of the cards. As soon as he puts his stamp of approval and puts his comments in that, I just want to talk about one thing about this deck. This was really crazy. So you have one card there, but when Eleanor Phillips, when I started working with this artist, so I always give them a cap color to do, you know, what this adult mushroom looks like, what the color looks like. And the first few mushrooms we did, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Hold on a second. This one can be purple. It can also be green. Okay, look, can you just make a mushroom? It's got like all these colors in it. And then that way, you know, maybe they won't eliminate it. And just by the second mushroom, I was like, wait a minute, this is crazy. And then I realized that for some reason, these mushrooms, the cap color variation is huge. And so we are the first people on the planet. You can see these beautiful cap variations on the front of the card. These are real mushrooms. These are actual caps of mushrooms. So you can, so that you don't, you understand that if you find this mushroom and it looks like this, but the cap, we're talking about card one, which is the Inosebe aeruginosus. If you find this mushroom that looks like this mushroom, but the cap is kind of a charcoaly color, oh, it could be that one too. You know, if it gets enough water and then gets sun or shade, or I don't know what happens with these hydroponous mushrooms, it completely changes cap color. So
a brilliant idea.
And aren't they beautiful? Are these cards a piece of art?
No, these cards are beautiful, and it's so simple. That's the other thing about this whole project is the design that's gone into these is kind of mind-blowing. I'm sure there's going to be people who have that graphic design background that are just going to be like, wow, they really figured out how to pack this information in a way that's like pleasing, aesthetically pleasing and everything else. And you also notice some other difference with these cards in cap descriptions. I do see on the card you sent me, there is a specific notched gill cross-section indicated, slightly more expansive habitat, slightly more expansive bruising. So, you know, different use case. We're talking about different groups of mushrooms, different features. So you've updated the cards.
I had to change a few things. The bruising for sure, you know, was really important in these mushrooms. Is it green? Is it blue? Is it dark blue? Is it dark green? Does it start from the bottom? Is it the cap? Is it? So we, you know, did a special area for bruising. The interesting area on these cards is the alkaloid concentration. So originally, I did massive amounts of research to find out what psychoactive chemicals were in these mushrooms and what the percentages were. And the range was just so huge because mushrooms, we're really not sure, but depending on the location, the habitat, who knows what else is going on in the earth around it, the psychoactive concentration is just, I was going to put something like, 0.0052 something. And then Alan's like, Elise, you know what? Forget it. We'll just put low, medium, and high. I gave him a list. I'm like, Alan, just stick it in there. And he did it in 1 second. And so the alkaloid concentration is marked low, medium, or high. And that will give people an idea of the strength of these, the psychoactive component of this mushroom. With staying within the sort of legal framework. That was another thing, is it's very legal in France. And these decks, by the way, they're available in English and French.
Yeah, which is wild to think that you've been able to do it, to adapt to both languages, even to make this design and everything, all the information in both languages.
But it's extremely illegal in France. And I'm a foreigner in a very small village. I have to be careful that they don't throw me in jail. So I had to put something that was vague enough. And you'll see there's nothing on the card that says that they're psychoactive or anything like that. Because you know what? The people who are looking for these mushrooms, they know what they're looking for. We don't have to talk about it. And, you know, whether it's a trip or a sacred, thing or a religious thing, there's all different ways of describing the experience that you're seeking with these mushrooms. So there's the alkaloid concentration is the only indication of the, that illegal component of it.
Well, and it covers the other big question that people have. I mean, just when you think about purpose of creating this, those are the three big questions anyone asks when you find a mushroom or tell them you found a mushroom. You know, is it edible? Is it toxic? Will it change my consciousness? So yeah, I mean, you need that kind of reference. These are the use cases for people out in the woods looking for mushrooms, basically.
Yeah, this was really a joy to do. I was just, and the artist and I were just, like, oh my God, these mushrooms are so beautiful. Just so much fun to be able to bring these to everybody.
And you mentioned they were in English and French. So obviously you were kind enough to send me decks. We've got renderings here. Where can people get their hands on the decks and when? And as much as you want to tell about that process too, of trying to get published in, what's kind of a non-traditional format. I guess any of that journey you want to share of that practical like publishing journey, and then where can people get these cards?
So the first deck became available in October of last year. I have been trying very hard to find a publisher. The format, this box with the guide, with the accordion guide, with the book and a craft box, this is a nightmare for a publisher. They do not want to invest. This is, a book costs them $1 to produce. They can do 5,000 and it's a small investment for them. This is 20 times that amount. So to find a publisher has been extremely difficult. So I've been selling them directly all over the place. But I do think I have a publisher finally, at least in France, but they have global distribution. For the moment, they're available through three sources. If you're in the US, you can go through Lola, which is Priscilla Wolf, who is a dear friend of mine who works with medicinal plants. She's in New York. She has a website where you can buy the book in the US. Witchfungi.com is a website where Europeans can buy. I can ship to Europe. I can also ship to the States. And it's available through Amazon, but I would only use Amazon for the Twins booklet because that's only available currently for Amazon. But just if you just get in touch with me, if you want the book, I'll let you know the best place to buy it. Now, The Wild Ones, which we're finishing up now, should be available for shipping out mid-October or end of October, the latest, hopefully. I really think this deck is gonna do well because it's impossible to get information otherwise. And by the way, the mushrooms in this deck are psychoactive mushrooms that are found in Europe and North America, not Mexico. So these are only the ones that you can find in North America, and most of them are also in Europe, but not Mexico.
And honestly, I mean, the quality of them, the package, it's like ideal gift. I mean, everyone should have one anyway, just because they are supremely useful, I think, in the woods. But I mean, you talk about a gift for anyone who's like myco-curious or anything, this is it. I absolutely love this concept and love this idea. And then it begs the obvious question of, will there be more? Do you have plans of going beyond entheogenic? Or what does that future look like for other identification decks? Maybe it depends on how.
Yeah, no, the next deck is going to be started pretty soon. But the medicinals, I already have a list of people who are, of course, and some of the edibles are also medicinal, and some of the entheogenics are also medicinal. But I think the medicinal mushrooms they're worth exploring as well. So that's going to be deck four, and then deck five will be the toxic ones, the toxic lookalikes, not the deadly lookalikes. But the toxic lookalikes. But the Twins booklet, you do not need to visually see the Twins, the lookalikes. You don't need the decks. It's nice to have the decks. But if you're looking to identify a common edible and you want to know how to eliminate the deadly or toxic lookalikes, you only need the Twins booklet anyway.
Well, and that's the great thing is, as a package, it's amazing. They all build on each other, but they're kind of whole and complete unto themselves. There's descriptions for each of the decks. They're useful on their own. And even that Twins guidebook we talked about, really useful on its own. And this must have been quite the learning process for you, Elise. I mean, I know you already had experience going to mycological societies, but I mean, this is kind of the undertaking of a mycological lifetime. Well, so I would guess this really exponentially increased your own knowledge.
I did Shotokan for many years, and I used to think that when I got to a black belt that I became an expert. But what you learn in martial arts is when you get to a black belt, that's the beginning. That's where you really start. And I am not even black yet. But even if I were a black belt in mushroom identification, which I'm not, but even if I was, it would just be the beginning. We're just learning. We're all just learning. So yeah, love moving up belts in this world. Hoping to get better.
And there's always more. That's the good thing. There's always more. That's been my journey on doing a podcast, is there's always more to know. So I had a feeling it had that impact on you. We'll put up all the websites, Instagram, everything in the show notes so people can find you, find the work. I guess, is there anything else you want to make sure we cover before we wrap?
Yeah, I wanted to let people know. You can see I'm in a room right now with mushroom painting, mushroom works all over the walls. Can you see?
Okay, yeah.
So I'm inviting you to France. I do foraging tours. You and your wife and your dog. If you could bring the dog. To France, because I also do guided mushroom tours, because we're surrounded by forest and the mushroom hunting this year has been really, really dry. It's been pathetic. I found two mushrooms so far, but normally we have mushrooms everywhere. It's like better than Northern California.
And what are the seasons in France? Better than Northern California. Well, what are the seasons in France then? I'm intrigued.
Same as California. It just normally, I mean, we're in an area, a fairly temperate mountain forest area. So we're getting our seasons a little bit extended. It's like Northern California. No, but we just have mushrooms everywhere. What can I say?
Well, that is too kind of an invitation. And, you know, when we eventually do the Mushroom Hour European tour, which we've talked about a lot, that would definitely be a stop. You know, twist my arm, take me to France and the mountains and hunt mushrooms. That sounds incredible. Super kind. Well, then I will wrap things up with the three questions I like to ask all my guests. And the first one, we've talked about so many, but just a mushroom or fungus that you love and why. Can be okay. For any reason. It can be a mushroom you just woke up thinking about today.
I think about mushrooms all the time. But my favorite mushroom, the common name is the charcoal burner, which is the Russula zyanaxantha. It's by far my most favorite mushroom because, first of all, I love Russulas. They yell at me when I'm out there. I'm here. That's great. they're nice and firm. And when you cook them, they stay firm and crunchy. And there's this lovely perfume that comes out of them that just makes you happy. I just love those mushrooms. Yeah.
That's a fantastic answer and probably an edible I never would have thought of had I not been introduced to it. Okay,
can I just tell you how to identify that one? That one is one of the easiest mushrooms to identify, and I don't know why people don't tell you this. It's one of the few Russulas. It is the only common Russula. So Russulas all have a stem that break like chalk, right?
Okay, chalk.
So we know that, right? So you know it's a Russula, usually some kind of fun color, but you know that the stem breaks like chalk. It breaks like chalk because the way these mushrooms are put together, they're kind of put together with little particles, like particle board almost, as opposed to strands. And normally when you rub your finger along the gills of a Russula mushroom, they break into little crumbs. It's very brittle. But this mushroom, the charcoal burner, when you rub your fingers against the mushroom, it spreads out like butter. Very easy to identify. There's only two other Russulas that do that, and they're Kuti, I'm not sure, I forget the names, but they're much rarer. So all you have to do is, because a Russula can be, it can either be gray, it can be blue, it can be green, it can be brown, it can be any color. But if it looks like it might be that one, and you rub your finger on the gills and that's it. And they're everywhere.
Everyone, we're going to add that to the repertoire. And then a much broader question, you know, but this relationship you've developed with fungal organisms, you know, throughout your life, foraging in all these different places, now writing a whole book, what has that given to you, insights gained from the fungi, from the mushrooms?
Well, walking in the forest is a heck of a lot more fun. I am not like a hiker. Like, yeah, you want to go on a hike? No. Are we going someplace special? If we're going someplace special, well, I'm hiking to a waterfall, no problem. I can do it for hours, no problem. But just to hike, no. Just to walk, no. Now that I want to identify every mushroom I find, the walk is like, it's like a party. So yeah, I love that. And also the other thing is that throughout my life, I've done projects that are nearly impossible to do. And my goal is to have an idea, to follow through with that idea, and to succeed at that idea. And I've done this with this project. Thank you, mushrooms.
Well, that is a lot to have gained from interacting with more than human or non-human organisms. So that's fantastic. And so that's kind of at the personal level. Then at a broader level, as more and more people go down this mycophilic path and our cultures inevitably become more inexorably linked with our fungi cousins and brethren, what are our highest hopes, or what do you see as the aspirations for how our society will improve for the better as we more successfully symbiosis with fungal organisms?
Well, I think one of the reasons why I think mushrooms are so important is because of their nutritional value to us. I think we have to be eating. I try to eat at least 25% wild forage foods because we are not going to thrive health-wise unless we're eating superfoods, unless we're eating, I do nettle soup. I mean, nettles are free. They're everywhere. They're super high in iron. Good diet. Why aren't people eating nettles? Why are they going and buying iceberg lettuce? So this idea of reconnecting with nature and having nature give us what we need to be at our best is a lesson that we're learning from mushrooms, but that's a lesson that we need to know for every, you know, for nature. It's nature.
Well, mushrooms are incredibly effective ambassadors of that concept. And I know for so many people, it's just what you said. You know, I got interested in mushrooms and suddenly I started thinking, man, the things that grow in my environment are influenced by where I live. So maybe to more successfully reach homeostasis with the environment around me, I need to consume things growing in that same environment. I am changed, as is the environment. So yes, I think mushrooms are a very effective ambassador of that concept. And I think that's a reminder, a good reminder for all of us. Well, Elise, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing this amazing project. Like I said, kind of the project of a mycological lifetime. When you think of the information you've distilled, the design that's gone into it, you can see how much thought and passion and attention has gone into this project. So it's been a joy to be able to speak with the maven behind the mycology here. And it's been just a pleasure to speak with you and hear your story. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
That was super fun.